Local news, culture, and NPR.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. Welcome to Farm and Country, locally produced radio about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. On today's show, Radio Catskill volunteer Michael Dwyer shares his conversation with Audrey Garrow, executive director at A Single Bite. We'll hear about the importance of their initiatives and who they serve in our community. All of that and Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report coming up on today's Farm and Country after news headlines from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. Rescue operations are ongoing in Myanmar and Thailand following the powerful earthquake that Myanmar's military-led government now says killed more than 1,000 people. The quake was centered near Mandalay. The BBC's Caroline Hawley put together this report with help from BBC colleagues on the ground in Myanmar.
In Myanmar's second-largest city, there's panic on the streets. Mandalay, 10 miles from the epicenter, is home to 1.5 million people. Buildings dangerously disfigured and fallen in on themselves after the earth moved beneath them. This woman's trapped with her baby boy. Her legs are caught under rubble on the ground floor of a damaged building in the capital, Naypyidaw. A painstaking effort to get her free.
In Thailand, rescuers are using heavy equipment to move rubble from the site of a collapsed high-rise that was under construction in Bangkok, some 600 miles away. Dozens of construction workers are missing. To Wisconsin now, where the state Democratic Attorney General is asking a court to block Elon Musk from handing out million-dollar checks to voters this weekend ahead of the state's hotly contested Supreme Court election. From Wisconsin Public Radio, Rich Kramer reports.
The Supreme Court race, with spending above $81 million, has shattered records for a U.S. judicial election. Elon Musk and two PACs he's associated with have poured $20 million into the contest, which some view as a referendum on President Trump's first few weeks in office. In a since-deleted social media post, Musk said he would travel to Wisconsin to hand out the million-dollar checks in appreciation for voting. Musk now says the money will go to people who have signed his petition opposing what he calls activist judges. Even with Musk's apparent change of reasoning, Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call is seeking a court order to stop the giveaway. For NPR News, I'm Rich Kramer in Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
State Department warning of what it calls potential imminent attacks against American citizens in Syria. The U.S. government's travel advisory for Syria's red, do not travel, the highest warning level. On top of that, it issued a new alert late Friday, as NPR's Lauren Freyer reports from Damascus.
The State Department says there's an increased possibility of attacks at the end of Ramadan on the Muslim holiday of Eid al-Fitr. It says the targets could be embassies, international organizations, and Syrian public institutions in Damascus. This past week, some European diplomats canceled planned trips to Syria because of a possible threat to their delegations. Hardline Muslim rebels ousted Syria's dictator late last year and are now trying to stabilize and rebuild the country after a nearly 14-year civil war. The U.S. embassy in Damascus closed at the start of that conflict. Lauren Freyer, NPR News, Damascus.
And from Washington, you're listening to NPR News.
Trout season is kicking off in Trout Town, USA. On April 1st at 7 a.m., it's the first cast at the Junction Pool in Roscoe. And the sold-out 64th Annual Two-Headed Trout Dinner is April 5th at the Rockland House, featuring a raffle and silent auction. There's still time for local businesses to donate items to the raffle and silent auction. More information about all of the events during trout season in Trout Town, USA at roscoeny.com. Paid for by the Roscoe-Rockland Chamber of Commerce.
On the next This Old House Radio Hour, documentary filmmaker Ken Burns turns a childhood sketch into a stunning Post and Beam New England barn.
Building a house is additive, but it's also subtractive. Form follows function, but in this case, we were able to edit, which is what I do for a living.
plus a blueprint for rebuilding Los Angeles after the wildfires.
That's This Old House Radio Hour, Sunday morning at 7 on Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow West Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Farm and Country. I'm your host, Rosie Starr. On today's show, Radio Catskill volunteer Michael Dwyer shares his conversation with Audrey Garrow, executive director at A Single Bite. We'll hear about the importance of their initiatives and who they serve in our community. First, here is Keith Hubbard with this week's Star Talk Report. Thank you for joining us on Radio Catskill for this week's locally produced Farm and Country.
Country. I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. A very rare event is predicted to occur sometime this year. A small star will dramatically increase in brightness for a short period. The event is known as a nova, derived from the Latin for new star. The small, dim star will suddenly brighten, giving the impression of a new star appearing in the sky. The star is a white dwarf that is part of a binary star system. The companion star is a red giant that is expelling matter. The matter expelled by the red giant accretes on the surface of the white dwarf. Eventually, a threshold is reached where the matter is hot enough to begin a thermonuclear reaction. This causes the white dwarf to increase in brightness as it burns off its accumulated matter. Once the matter is burned off, the white dwarf returns to its original brightness and the cycle begins again. The star in question is in the constellation Corona Borealis, a semicircle of stars between Hercules and Bootes. Corona Borealis will be visible in the east around 9:45 p.m. this week. With each passing month, it will rise 2 hours earlier. Currently, the star is too faint to be seen with the naked eye, but it could be as bright as the North Star, Polaris. The nova will be visible for several days before fading from view. The nova occurs about once every 80 years, with the last occurrence in 1946. The nova will not light up the night sky, so familiarize yourself with the constellation Corona Borealis now so you can more easily spot the nova when it appears. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future Star Talk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard reminding you to keep looking up.
Here is Radio Catskill volunteer Michael Dwyer sharing his conversation with Audrey Garrow, executive director at A Single Bite.
Today I'm here with Audrey Garrow from A Single Bite in Liberty, New York. Can you just tell us what is A Single Bite?
Sure. So A Single Bite is a not-for-profit, very small not-for-profit, formed, founded by Foster Supply Hospitality, Sims and Kirsten Foster, with the goal of helping to improve the general health of Sullivan County, specifically by improving the nutrition for young people and helping them to learn about real food, we like to call it, and make decisions that are positive for their health when they can.
And I want to come back to that, especially the youth part of it and the schools. But in reading through some of your literature, you know, there's some statistics about Sullivan County in New York State that really jump out at me. So it says 16.1% of our 78,000 residents live below the poverty line. The child food insecurity rate is 18.3%, which is more than 2% higher than the national average. And also that one in five children in Sullivan County do not get enough to eat. Now, that's pretty staggering. And I know this is probably nationwide in many counties, but when you see those statistics in the United States, for one, and in New York State, which I think is one of the more wealthier states, if I'm not mistaken, it just sort of hits you in the gut. Can you just speak to that, those numbers and that reality?
The simple fact that one in five of the children that you see in a schoolroom, on a playground, at any community gathering is not getting enough healthy food to eat daily is, it is shocking. And, you know, we like to say once you see food insecurity, you really can't unsee it. It's a major contributing factor to poor health outcomes. And in this county, especially being a rural county, there are many challenges that come, you know, with this concept of hunger, really.
Well, I did want to ask you about that, about why is the rural setting, why does that make it more challenging? Because, you know, we're surrounded by farms up here, so you would think, and there's tons of farmers markets I've seen, like in many towns. So is it, and I'm asking you a couple questions at once, but I'm sure it's educational, like children may not know what's healthy versus what's not healthy. And is it also availability?
Yeah, it actually comes down to, Michael, economics. In most cases, people are food insecure or not getting enough nutritional food because they can't afford it. That may be because they can't actually afford better quality non-processed foods in the grocery store, or it might mean that their car isn't working and they can't get good, healthy, fresh produce regularly. It may mean that they simply don't have a working stove or a working refrigerator. Sometimes it comes down to a decision about whether to pay the utility bill. Mm-hmm. And in reality, I think most kids would make a good choice given the opportunity. When you ask them what they prefer, generally they want something that tastes good, that looks good, that smells good. So the instincts are there, just sometimes the opportunity isn't there.
Right. So you just reminded me, during COVID, I worked for the public health department and doing contact tracing, where we'd have to call people up and say, you know, please quarantine or isolate. And to get out of quarantine, you'd have to fill out a form. So we'd say, well, just go to your computer and fill this. And, you know, not everyone has a computer. Not everyone has internet. There's a lot of things we take for granted that you discover, you know, people, not everybody has the same things.
Right.
So there's that sort of bias that we sort of have built in. So, yeah, to touch on the Real Food Education Program, if I have that right, which I guess is taking place in all eight school districts in Sullivan County. So what, if I'm a student and I'm going into my classroom tomorrow morning, what does that look like to me?
Well, the foundation of what we're looking to do as we feed and educate our community, our neighbors, with real food, is to go in and start a conversation. It's our belief that healthy food memories, you know, the idea of eating in a social setting, eating food that, again, looks good, smells good, that you feel good after eating, does create a memory that you want to repeat. And those are versus processed food, which sometimes has short-term satisfaction for especially for young people. We really try to explain to them the difference between real food and processed food, explain to them how processed food is actually scientifically designed to make them crave it, not their fault.
It sounds like you or people at Single Bite are going into the classrooms and either working with the teacher or taking the teacher's place for a few minutes and educating. But you also do things on site, right, at your location where kids can get into the kitchen and sort of get their hands on healthy food, so to speak?
Yeah. So the Real Food Education Program was designed to be experiential. Yes. So we're not lecturing. We're having a conversation. And that conversation starts with trying new foods, foods that are locally sourced, foods that are prepared minimally processed, and foods that are easy to identify. So we start by talking about the definition of real food and what it is. We also talk about processed foods and what makes a food processed, right? Mm-hmm. Where it comes from, how many ingredients it has, et cetera. And the name A Single Bite really does come from that experience that we offer students, which is try it. We only ask that you try a single bite. And we do promise that it'll taste delicious. You may not enjoy it now, but at some point in your life, you hopefully will remember that you tried this food, and it will encourage you to maybe try another food like kale, like sweet potatoes. You know, I think there are a lot of foods that students just don't necessarily see in their raw form that we just try to expose them to.
I know that you work in the community with other organizations and you collaborate. Can you speak to a little bit about those partnerships or those collaborations?
Sure. As you mentioned, the benefit of being in Sullivan County is that food is grown here. So being able to share with students a field trip to a farm, we also take them to a restaurant so we can sit and eat together the food that they've actually seen growing, help to harvest in some cases. And then we go back and have another conversation. And being able to talk to farmers, being able to talk to people that are working with food every day, I think really does solidify for these young people the idea that there are a lot of options, and also helps them to be a little bit more adventurous in terms of what they might try in the cafeteria, at home, or, you know, somewhere else in their future. Our founder, Sims Foster, likes to start the classes when he has a chance to be there by saying one person in this classroom's life is going to change, maybe not today. And I generally think that's true. We talk to students that experienced the Single Bite program, and years later they'll say, I remember trying those onions and I didn't like them then, but I like them now, or smoked trout. So we really do try to introduce them to foods that are grown here in Sullivan County, so they also get a sense of their community.
Right. That's great. So you mentioned Sims Foster, and I think that's an important part of the origin story of Single Bite. So Sims grew up in Sullivan County, and people may or may not know Foster Supply, but they will know several of the restaurants and hotels that they own. Can you maybe paint a picture of?
Sure. A Single Bite was really founded by Sims and Kirsten Foster because they were starting to raise a young family here. Mm. Sims's family has been here for generations. He's committed not only to the economic growth of this county, but also to the health of the county. And as a restaurateur and a hotelier, he really just tried to figure out what he could do to help improve the health of the county. And there was one thing that he really knew in his heart and soul, and that was food. So as they started to think about feeding their young children, they kind of put two and two together, and working with a local teacher, developed a program that they initially presented as volunteers in the Livingston Manor School District. And as time went by, other school districts were kind of interested and asking, could we maybe have a Single Bite in our schools? And that's kind of how we met each other. Sims and Kirsten wanted to expand. It really made a lot of sense. I think it's the kind of program that's easy to replicate once you really understand the partners that you need, teachers, mm-hmm. farmers, people who work in food service. And so now today we're in every school district in Sullivan County. We talk to every seventh grader every year, and that's thousands of children over the past several years that have learned lessons of real food and hopefully will be inspired to make healthier choices as they grow older.
Yeah, that is amazing that you're in every single district in the county. So I just wanted to touch on something. I know you said Single Bite is a nonprofit, so I guess you're relying on some donations from the community, individuals or companies, and I don't know if you have funding from the government, but, you know, I have friends at other nonprofits in the arts and in healthcare, and their funding is either being cut or being threatened to be cut with new laws that are being passed. So, I mean, it's a real thing. Is that affecting you guys at the moment or potentially?
Since our inception, A Single Bite has been and will continue to be very independent. We're flexible. We provide education free of charge to all the students that go through the four-part program. We rely 100% on contributions. We do not accept any government funds other than grants that are specifically designed to support education or designed to improve the nutrition for young people. That's something that we really pride ourselves on. I think the other thing that's really important about us is that the individuals, the businesses, the family foundations that do support us, I think, share in our belief that the health of children and their healthy outlook on what's possible in their lives is really what's going to help not only Sullivan County, but the you know, the world as a whole to be a better place to live. Happier kids, happier world, hopefully.
Absolutely. So it's 2025. We're just still in the first few months here, I guess. Is Single Bite, are there new initiatives specifically for 2025 or beyond, or is it just continuing as I'm sure you have plans to expand and grow? Yeah. And
so this is actually, this is the beginning of Single Bite's sixth year. We are committed to our education program and looking to expand it to involve younger people and also to stay with students through high school, talking to them about potential careers in the food industry, whatever that may be, food science, education, culinary, even food photography, whatever they might be interested in. But understanding the food system and all the different ways that food actually touches all of our lives every day. We are what we eat. We talk to the younger kids about that. I think it's an opportunity for us to not only continue the conversation about making healthy choices, but also to help them have a healthier outlook on being able to, as we talked about earlier, afford the food that they might choose to eat. As that becomes more and more of a challenge, we're looking now at the price of eggs. It's an amazing source of protein. There are some other animal proteins that are more expensive. So when we talk to families about the other part of our mission, which is feeding families with children, we really need to understand that being flexible and being creative are two important parts of having a healthy diet.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I guess if people want to support Single Bite or get involved, how do they contact you or reach you? I'm sure you have a website.
Because we are a community-based not-for-profit, we not only rely on contributions so that we can operate, we also look to volunteers to help us to distribute the food that we do share with families in the community. We recently had the opportunity to change our food program, our family meal program, by moving into the Catskills Food Hub and building a kitchen. So we now have the capacity to move closer to actually fulfilling the need that many families do have. We provide one free meal every week of the year to families in need. They only need to tell us that they have need and that there are children in the household. So our requirements are really, I think, easy for people to feel comfortable asking for help. Often people are hesitant to do that for a variety of reasons. So we really like to feel comfortable being able to say yes whenever asked to support a family. The kitchen now affords us the opportunity to feed right now 820 individuals who really would not be getting otherwise that healthy meal once a week. And we can cook all we want, but we rely on volunteers exclusively to deliver those meals. We learned during COVID, when transportation was an issue, that this community really can come together in amazing ways. And we have a very active core of volunteers who not only help us to package the meals and get them out to the community, but literally drive to these families who may be challenged in terms of transportation or have other issues that prevent them from getting good food. And so we leave that nutritious meal for them. We also take it as an opportunity to check in with those people that maybe, you know, they feel good about a neighbor feeding them, right? Food is love. Yeah. So we like to maybe perpetuate that opportunity for a community to connect as well.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up because I was going down I was exploring about the education in the school, and I almost, you know, skipped right over the fact that you're delivering, like you said, over 800 meals a week. You are delivering meals to people's homes where they live free of charge based on their need. So if people were in need, need a meal or want to help you deliver those meals, they can go to your website. Is that the best way?
Yes, asinglebite.org.
Right.
It's the easiest way to get in touch with us. You can call us at 845-482-1030. And even if you're just wanting to learn more, I think the more people in this community that understand the challenges and also hopefully the solution that we're trying to put out there every day, we have advocates then, we have people who are rooting for us, and that's just as important as a volunteer or a donor, although those are very important as well.
And I just want to close, I guess, can you just speak personally about your, you know, this is your daily job, and I'm sure you jump out of bed in the morning raring to go because you're helping people, but what's your experience been for yourself in this role?
Having lived in Sullivan County for about 25 years now, and having worked in other not-for-profit settings, hospitals, and the arts, I feel more connected, closer to my community than I ever have. Mm-hmm. I feel closer to not only the people that are helping us, our volunteers, the farmers that donate food to help us every season, but also to the educators, to the people that work for the county and other agencies, food pantries, who are also trying to do the best that they can do, yes, mostly volunteers. Personally, I'm a cancer survivor. If I hadn't had the opportunity to have good nutrition, I wouldn't have healed the way that I did. People helped my family by actually bringing us food. So I do understand what it's like to be on the other side of it. And it is a motivating factor. It is. I think the lack of alternative motivations by the people that are actually involved in helping to address food insecurity is reassuring. It's heartening. And it encourages me every day to go to work, to try to think about the best way for us to support people respectfully, and also to listen to those people who want to help, to understand what motivates them, and then to bring more people in to help. That's my job. I ask.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for speaking with me today. Again, if people want to get in touch, it's asinglebite.org to learn more.
That was Radio Catskill volunteer Michael Dwyer sharing his conversation with Audrey Garrow, Executive Director at A Single Bite. More information for A Single Bite is available on their website, asinglebite.org. All one word, asinglebite.org. We hope that you enjoyed our show this week with production by Radio Catskill volunteers, Keith Hubbard, Michael Dwyer, and myself, Rosie Starr. Special thanks goes to our guest, Audrey Garrow, Executive Director at A Single Bite. Thanks for listening local to Farm and Country and supporting Radio Catskill. Listen to us on air and on your smartphone. Stream us live at wjffradio.org. We are Radio Catskill, local news, culture, conversations, and NPR.